listening to the TJSlideways.com podcast, brought to you by All-Star Performance, Bailey's Racing Engine, Engine Pro, Maxim Chassis, MCS Auction, Must-See Racing, Oschwecken Speedway, Poncho's Racing Products, Slade Shock Technology.
Thank you, Beth. Tonight on the podcast, joining us from the road is former World of Outlaws champion Jason Myers. And first off, want to thank you for taking time out of your very busy schedule to join us tonight.
No, it's my pleasure. Looking forward to the conversation and glad to have the opportunity to do the show.
Yeah, and first off, it's something, you know, we don't see you as much these days out here in the Midwest. And one thing that what people ask about you when I travel around and stuff is, how is Jason Myers doing? A lot of the West Coast fans get to see you and such, but all the Midwest and Eastern fans don't get to see you. So how is Jason Myers doing with this curtailed racing schedule?
Well, I'm doing really well. I appreciate everybody asking, and we've spent almost 2 years now. It's been about 18 to 20 months of trying to become normal, I guess is what we keep calling it. We came home and getting acclimated to being at home, and it's a lot different. We spent 10 or 12 years on the road, and, you know, you miss more than anything all the friendships and acquaintances that you've made all across the country that you used to look forward to seeing them all throughout the season at different times, and now we don't get that opportunity. So that was probably one of the biggest transitions. That said, you know, we're starting, I think, to get a little more comfortable here at home. Our girls have started, they're both in, one's in preschool, one's in kindergarten, and they've got all their things going on now. So we're very, very busy with that, as well as with our business ventures that we've gone into, and still getting the opportunity to do some racing with Tom and Tommy Tarleton out here and their group, and a few other opportunities as well. So we're enjoying life. Things are good, and we just keep plugging along here, trying to build a future for our family here at home and trying to keep our foothold a little bit in the sport that we so dearly love and has given us so much over the years, and hopefully we'll find ways to give back here over the next several years.
That first year, what was the hardest part? Was there a part of the year or a particular part where you thought in your head, I should be here or this part of the country? Was there any time that your mind kind of strayed from that and went, oh man, it's so weird I'm not blank?
When we made up our mind we were going to do that, like, we were really, really focused on it. So, I always try to concentrate on not looking back. You know, when you make a decision, you really put some time into it and you make a good, honest decision, and then you don't look back after that, because you can't. If you do that, it just, you know, prolongs you getting to where you need to be. So, like I said a little bit ago, I think the toughest part was just, missing those relationships and the friendships. And, you know, you get home, and we have a great group of friends here at home, but we haven't been part of their lives for 10 years, you know, so they do their things every week, and what is kind of normal to us, and things we might do in a week is quite a bit different. So that took, you know, some acclimating, and we're really fortunate to have some great people around us here at home, and that, you know, that made that transition a little bit easier, but that really was the toughest part, and still is today, because you just don't have the reasons to travel like we used to, so we don't get to see so many of the great folks that are very near and dear to our hearts across the country.
And but you still are racing, and one thing coming up this weekend, Trophy Cup. And a lot of fans out here are starting to hear about the Trophy Cup, and they hear about how great it is, but all my West Coast friends I talk to are just extraordinarily excited about this, and it's become quite a unique event. What makes the Trophy Cup such a great event?
You know, there's a couple of key elements to that, and number one, it's the people behind it, and Dave Pusateri and his entire group have done an incredible job over several years now. You know, they stuck with it year after year after year. It's for a great cause. I mean, all the proceeds go to the Make-A-Wish Foundation. It's really 4 or 5 points. Number one is the fact that it benefits the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Number two is how great of a job they do with the race. It's a good format. It's at a great racetrack that does a great job preparing the track with Tulare Thunderbolt there. So the racing is always really good. It draws drivers from all over the country, so you've got a great field. The car owners and everybody get behind it and fielding additional cars for other drivers. You know, Jack Hodenshield is one that always makes it out here from back east. And it's just really, it's a great event. It's fun. It's a multiple-day event. It's been promoted very, very well, and the fans support it. You know, it, you could do all the right things, and if the fans don't support it, then it doesn't turn out. And, you know, thankfully the fans have really gotten behind it and made it a date on their calendar that they plan on. You know, when this one's over, they start planning for next year. So it's just a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to be part of. Everybody gets behind the cause, and it, you know, it's a great paying race for the car owners and drivers too. So it's really got all the elements going forward to it, and you really got to attribute that to the dedication of some great people over several years that have built it into just a great event, and they've stuck with it.
And one other thing that I find unique about that is when people start tinkering with race formats and stuff, a lot of times that's not welcomed by drivers normally, but it seems like as a whole, the drivers that participate in the Trophy Cup love the format. So as a driver, why, if you like the Trophy Cup format, why do you like it so much, and what's the challenge of it?
Well, I think two elements from it. From the fan standpoint, there's a lot of drama. It's almost a soap opera, if you will, of what's going to happen. You know, you're watching the race, and the first night's just kind of a normal race. But the second night, when they come in there and they invert the entire field, you know, I know a lot of people like to see that, and that's tough to do on a level like a World of Outlaw level, because there's just so many cars that are so good that when you invert them like that, you don't see that great of a race, because the car that you put on the front row is still good enough to win the race. Where, you know, you're inverting a little more of a local field that has a different caliber of drivers, different caliber of cars. There's a big spread between, you know, the guys that are most likely have the chance of winning the event, and then you have the other guys that are either, you know, younger drivers or, you know, guys that aren't quite up to speed. And I think when you have that element, you can invert the field like that, and Tulare does a great job. It's a good place where you can pass and get through the field, and it really puts on a great show for the fans. And then it's so suspenseful, because even if a guy comes from the back and comes up to third, doesn't mean he won the event. It all comes back to the point. So you have that dramatic conclusion of, did he get enough spots, and where did the other driver finish that was in the hunt? So it's really got, I think, kind of a neat suspenseful element to it that the fans enjoy. And from a driver's perspective, it's because of that difference in the speed of some of the different, you know, entrance of the race, you can go to the back and you can come from the back and get up and get to the front. So it really, you know, it's just a fun event, and the format works for just everything that they've got going on. You know, you could take that format and go to a place like Pennsylvania and it would fail miserably, but it works out here, and they've done a great job with tinkering it with it just a little bit over the years to really fine tune it. And when they got it right, they left it alone, and it's been a great event for several years.
Of course, it's at Tulare Thunderbowl this weekend. Now, another thing on your calendar that was added, the release came out that you're going to be driving for Casey Kane Racing at the World Finals this year. When did discussion start with KKR about driving for them at World Finals?
You know, we're really excited about getting together with Casey and his entire group there with Ollie's Bargain Outlet and the 49 car. You know, the conversation really started at Gold Cup. We were up, and we've been friends for a long time with Casey and Willie and Kale and everybody, a lot of the guys on the team, David Farrow that works on the 49 car. And we've talked about doing things from time to time, especially since Brad runs a limited schedule and they've got some opportunities, but, you know, it just never really has worked out for everybody. Casey's always really wanted to stand behind his drivers and make sure that he's not doing anything to interrupt their progress, and I fully respect that. And when we were at Gold Cup this year, we were just kind of talking. We were actually pitted next together, and the conversation came up about the World Finals and what I was doing, and that they were actually going to, the 49 team was going to be basically done after the Gold Cup because Brad had other nationwide commitments. And so we got to talking, and someone asked what I was doing, and I said nothing. And kind of one thing led to another. You know, we got to talking about doing it, and we got Casey on the phone that following week and talked about if they had, you know, the pieces to do it. And you know, there's three teams with KKR, and at the same time, you've got Darren Pittman that in a fierce battle with Donnie Schatz for a championship. So, you know, we didn't want to get involved and certainly pull any resources from any other team because we don't want to hinder their progress at all. And so Casey spent a little time with the guys on the team and figured out that it was possible, and we put it together. So we're really excited about it. Charlotte's a great event, and looking forward to coming back and having the opportunity to work with KKR and David Farrow and Willie King and just the entire group there And really looking forward to it. Casey's given us a great opportunity here, and hopefully we can go out and do a good job for him. A great event.
Now, when I look at KKR, I look at them a lot like I look at your World of Outlaw team. Your team, when you had it, you guys developed a lot of parts and pieces, and you developed some relationships with various manufacturers and stuff to come up with some exclusivity to some pieces and stuff. In an era where we hear so often, well, the gaps are tight because you can buy something off the shelf and you can have a real quick race car right off the shelf, how important is it for a race team today, like at that level, to be able to develop that unique piece or maybe develop that relationship where you're only getting your engines for that guy or maybe a chassis combination that maybe no one else has to be able to give you that edge?
Well, you know, I think we're at a point in the competitive cycle of things in sprint car racing where everything matters. And, you know, it's kind of like if somebody wants to lose weight, if you want to lose 10 pounds, the first five to lose is fairly easy. It's that last five that gets really difficult. And, you know, the sport of sprint car racing is at that point where there's no one area to find a big gain anymore. I mean, you can buy everything so much off the shelf, and everything is stretched so far and so thin. And it's not to say that there won't be new developments, but there will. But at the same time, the rule books have been tightened up so much over the last several years where they've taken away a lot of areas where you could make any changes to make gains. So now you have this very small area that you can work on, and it gets expensive. And you know, 95% of what you try every year you put back on the shelf because it didn't work or it's just not, didn't have the right combination with some other piece of the car. So I think it's really important to have, it all really comes down to relationships at the end of the day. I think it's very important to have great relationships within your team and the chemistry of your team. And great, really important to have, you know, different relationships with different areas of the industry. And some of that stuff, you know, we did a lot of it in-house to where we were able to make some gains. And when we did, we were able to, you know, keep those proprietary for some length of time. You know, it's a pretty open sport. There's not much on the cars that you can't see with the naked eye. And some things are pretty hard to cover up. But, you know, for the most part, we were able to keep some of those things for long lengths of time. And I think it's very important. I know that KKR has worked really hard to do that too, and they've done a good job, and you know, as well as Tony Stewart and a lot of the other guys too. So it's definitely very, very competitive anymore, and you've really got to pay attention to every little piece, I think, if you want to win the championship.
When you're doing that sort of program, is it hard to get off, is it easy to get off on the wrong path and maybe not be able to get back off it because you have so much invested in something like that?
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, and I think that was one thing that we really worked hard. Charlie Garrett is somebody who helped us tremendously with that, because we used to kind of joke about how hard it was to get Charlie to try things, but what he taught us is that you've got to stay close to your center line. You know, you get too far from it, and then it's hard to find your way back. So he really, and being an engine builders probably know that better than anybody, that when you try something, you need to try something, and if it didn't work, you need to go back to your baseline and then try again, because if you get too far off of that base, you get lost. And Charlie is really, I think, probably one of the key instruments that helped teach those of us on the team that, you know, we're younger and don't have the experience and the wisdom that he has over the years, that of that method of how to develop and how to test things and how to find things without costing yourself, you know, a slump in the middle of the season because you've gotten too far off. And it really helped our program.
And one thing I hear about all the time is when you get guys that are on tour and off tour and do partial schedules and stuff, they talk about being up to outlaw speed. It seems like you have managed, though, to stay at outlaw speed, even over two seasons. You won the Gold Cup this year. How difficult is it to maybe go race locally, maybe with like the King of West Series or something, and then come back to the outlaw tour and the speed picks up a little bit? Have you found that to be easier than you thought, or do you even have to kind of pick yourself up a little bit to get back to outlaw speed, so to speak?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because the West Coast tracks are so much different than the rest of the country, and you know, running out here on the West Coast, it's kind of a lot of different tracks than the outlaws are used to. So you almost have an advantage when you're running around here over the outlaws because you're used to the tracks and you know what's coming. And you know, these guys get to see these tracks once, maybe twice a year if they're lucky. So I think where it's more difficult is, for instance, when we went out to Knoxville last year, actually 2 years ago now, it took us a week and a half really to get where we were, where we needed to be. And you know, that's not, it's, when you talk about getting up to speed, it's, it's the whole package. It's not necessarily just the driver getting up to speed and getting comfortable. It's getting the cars right and getting the wings right and the shocks right and all that kind of thing, all those kinds of things. And then that all changes over time. So that's stuff you really got to stay up on and keep up with. And I mean, I got to say, as a driver, it comes back pretty quickly. I mean, you know, within a half a night, I think you really get comfortable and your reactions get there, as long as you've still been doing something. And it's every piece. You know, a driver can't do it all alone. You've got to get your car right. Your motor's got to be where they need to be. And that really comes down to having a good team of people that can make that happen as quick as possible.
And you've managed to carve out a great career for yourself. And I know there's always, you know, at least I even have a racing bucket list, and lots of other people do too. So now that your career's been kind of, you know, in this new direction and you're enjoying yourself, does Jason Meyer still have a couple racing bucket list items he needs to cross off of his list?
Well, I mean, I'm only 34 years old, so yeah, I got a lot of things I still want to cross off. You know, I don't know that I could name that list right now. There's some things I would like to do, and one thing that comes to mind, you know, the thing that is still not crossed off my list is the Knoxville Nationals. And to achieve that feat at this point will be even more difficult with not racing as much and things like that. But we've kind of been talking about some opportunities to do something like that and be involved. And first and foremost, it's just, that is on my bucket list, but on my priority list, not number one right now. It's, you know, it's developing a career here at home to support my family and be able to be at home and be a father and be a husband and all those kinds of things. So I got a family. That being said, I got a family that's 100% behind me. So I really got the best of both worlds. And at some point here, hopefully that we can still compete at that level where we can cross that off the list.
Is racing more fun now?
No, I wouldn't say it's more or less. You know, people ask me that all the time. We go out, for instance, we ran second at Hanford the other night, and somebody says, well, it was fun. Was it fun? And I said, no, it wasn't fun. We lost. You know, we were leading and we got beat. And once you run at that level, I think you'll hear a lot of guys say that. Anyone who's been on the road, whether they've been a driver or a crew chief or part of the crew or whatever they've been, when you race at that level, it's hard to really ever go back and just be a hobby racer, because you don't know any other way other than full speed and at that competitive level. So for me, it's always been fun. We've been very, very blessed with our opportunities and blessed with a lot of great people in our lives that have made it possible. And we're still continuing to be blessed that way. So to say it's more or less fun, no, I would say it's just as much fun. Stress level is definitely a little bit different. But still, at the end of the day, the fun, for me, the stress really doesn't affect the fun. You know, it's when you're running well, it's fun, and when you're not, it's a struggle and a challenge. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's not fun either. You know, it's fun to learn. I just learned something the other night. You know, we weren't that good, and as many years as you do this, you continue to learn, and that's really the fun part about it, is that constant challenge, that constant change to be better, and to compete is really the fun part of it. So we're still getting to do that, and I guess in the end, to answer the question, the stress level is a little bit different, and I think that probably makes it more enjoyable for those around you. It's probably the same for me, but it probably makes it more enjoyable for those around me.
And one final question. I've always thought of you as a very insightful guy when it comes to the sport, and at all levels and all factions. What's one thing do you think that sprint car racing is doing really well right now as a whole, and what one thing do you think we need to improve on as in the sport itself the most?
Well, I think you've got, you know, the one thing that's, especially we're seeing this on the West Coast right now, and looking at the results of the National Open the other night, you've got a lot of car owners and good drivers and good car owners in the sport right now. And, you know, that goes up and down over the years. If you look back about 5 or 6 years ago, it got really, really slim. And I know out here on the West Coast right now, there's a lot of young talent that has good equipment underneath them, and they're talented, and the racing's really good out here right now. So I think, you know, sprint car racing, as, you know, I wouldn't say that we're back to the days of 98, 99, 2000 when it was really, really big. And part of what made it big was the TV package and things like that they had. So, you know, I don't know where that's going. There has been some new announcements yet that look good. But really, I think the caliber of race cars right now is really, really good. And for whatever reason that is, you know, it's just timing. But it is... certainly the competition level is really good right now. some areas that they might need. You know, I don't know. That's always so hard to answer. I think what's maybe hurting sprint car racing, in my opinion, right now would be some of these rules and some of these things that you have to run and things like that, because it really drives the cost of the sport up. I mean, the only rule that has, in my opinion, ever saved a dollar in sprint car racing was, having, like, for instance, the outlaw rule of having to qualify, heat race, and run the dash on the same right rear tire. That saves you one right rear tire a night. But outside of that, anything, whether it's been a weight rule or a wing rule or anything like that, has just cost tons of money of it when it comes to trying to redevelop and make the cars do what they used to be able to do, because they take things away and then you got to try to work around them, and that costs a considerable amount of money in not only time and effort and testing, but in throwing away parts when you build a wing or build a car or build this or build that to try to make it better and it doesn't work. And then, you know, a lot of that stuff, you build a frame and it doesn't work, it's, you don't just go back and cut it apart and change it. You know, for the most part, you build another one. There's just a lot of some things like that that I feel are, we got some segregation across the country with so many different rules. You know, I've seen some more come out right now where a local driver's got to show up and he's got to buy two tires and a wing to run a race. Well, that doesn't really help car counts. You know, we need to, I think the best thing would be to open some of these rules back up where it's, for one, the teams can make gains in a cheaper method, and for two, it would just allow more racers to come race with what they have, rather than they don't come race because they'd have to spend $1,000 to go out and maybe compete to make $250. You know, it just doesn't make sense.
And
maybe some things like that. But that's my opinion, and that's, you know, my point of view, and many can receive that as well. So it's very difficult. It's very difficult to put it all together when there's, you know, so many different organizations, tracks, car owners, promoters, drivers all across the country that trying to get them on the same page is a very difficult task.
After all, if you have $1,000 to make your race car faster, you're going to spend $1,000 to make your race car faster. So, well, Jason, I really appreciate you taking time to join us, and we do miss you out here, but I can appreciate especially what you're doing and spending time with the family and stuff. I do the same thing, and it's been great to have you back on, and look forward to talking to you again, and great success over at the World Finals and over at the Trophy Cup this weekend.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, and I want to say thanks to all the fans for their support and our decisions over the last couple of years and our continued support on and off the racetrack. We've just had a great fan base over the years, made a lot of great friends. We're very blessed and thankful for all of them, and thankful for the opportunities that we continue to have in the sport. It's a great sport with a lot of great people and guys like yourselves and so many others that host these shows and things like that that keep everybody up to speed. It's really great. The sprint car community is one of the best, and we're very thankful to be part of it.
All right, thank you for your time, Jason, and wish you the best.
Thank you.
All right, that'll do it for this edition of the TJ Slideways podcast. We'll see you again next week. Thank you, and good night.